us talk before lunch. So only one talk in this block. I'm surprised myself. The real experience at scale. The title of, or maybe one of the title of this talk. but Andrew Bartlett, have much fun.
Yeah. There's months between when you have to try and write these abstracts and when you've got to try and actually, you know, put the slide together on the flight over. It's a very long flight. There's plenty of time to work. And Emirates has power at the seat, so that's kind of nice. A few things happened on the way to LMDB. So this is me, and this is the team I work with. Because although I do the talking up at the stage, Gary does the grunt work, and Garmin does the thinking, and Douglas does the pretty graphs, and Joe does the automation with Ansible, and Aaron thinks he knows about everything with DNS, and is about to find that this is a pit of hell for which he'll never escape. Jamie's been our intern and made the self-test system actually possible to do all this CI stuff that you've been hearing me talk about. So we're based in Wellington. We have a busy little room in Catalyst House in Wellington, and I'm the Samba team lead there. I've been doing this since 2001, which is feeling like a very, very long time ago. I enjoy questions during the talk. If we can derail this totally, we'll do very well. So prepare to run with the mic. This is not really a story about LMDB. I'm very sorry, Howard, you were brought here on false pretenses. Because, happily or sadly, I'm not quite sure which, LMDB pretty much did what it said on the tin. But instead, LMDB taught us about Samba and LDB, and a lot of things that we weren't quite doing right just ended up showing up a lot better when you change the fundamental assumptions of the store on which you're working. We found numerous locking issues, and we've put in a new key value layer. And Gary spent many, many, many weeks writing tests. So the customer came to us. The customer had a simple requirement. They had managed to, probably through the doing some things with the domain and not ever doing anything to repack the domain, as per my conversation with Howard just a moment before, got databases that were looking big to them. TDB will auto-expand a database as it needs, and they were getting closer to 4 gig than they were comfortable with, even though they'd only, they JC filled it as much as they could. And they were worried that what would happen if they actually got to 4 gig, never mind that TDB was busy doubling the database size and that most of it wasn't in use, that the customer got worried. And, of course, we're consultants, so the customers got worried, and we're very glad to help alleviate that worry, as well as making Samba incredibly better in the process. So they wanted a 64-bit database, and it's actually quite reasonable. You wouldn't want to get to a hard limit and then start a procurement process. That would really get bad. So, and they wanted 100,000 users in a single domain. More between, they want 300,000 objects. They 125,000 users, 150,000 computers, you know, and all the rest. So we chose LMDB. It seemed to be, it's been used in OpenLDAP, so that has a reputation for scaling. That was thought to be a good thing. And so we started. Well, more particularly, we didn't start at all. And so that rather shortcutted the whole checking out all the options process, because Jacob, who was working at Red Hat, had done a prototype of LMDB as a backend to Samba. For Samba's LDB, sorry. And so this was presented, and with not very satisfying results. It wasn't much faster than what was already there with TDB. But it was there, and it was, you know, and Garmin across a January decided that this would be worth hacking on and having another go at. Because, and so we did, so he had a go with this and rewrote the earlier prototype. We also did some work in July and August last year around the GUID indexes with a view to some of the restrictions that LMDB would force upon us so that we wouldn't, you know, have to come up with another scheme later. It brought its own performance improvements. And then Gary's been doing the primary development earlier this year. So from the approach that Jacob had started with, which was to copy LGBTDB, rip parts out that and then just make the whole module adapted to LMDB, we decided to instead put in a new layer into this module. So this LDBTDB presents an LDAP-like view on a flat file database. LDBTDB does things like unpack the records. So you've got a typical LDAP record with a DN and all object classes and attributes. So it does all the handling of putting all that into a single value in the database and then assigning keys to it, as well as handling the indexes that help us find those data faster, handling traversing the whole database if you have to search for something that's not in an index. All these complex details are handled in LDBTDB. Also handles the modify operations, where at an LDAP layer you say, I want to add one value to one attribute, but you've got to replace a whole blob in the database. So what we did is that we didn't want this stuff duplicated. Duplicate code is just asking for bugs not to get fixed in the other copy and all sorts of things. And we also wanted to potentially allow more than LMDB as a potential backend, because we wouldn't want to be boxed in again. That would just be really futile. So we've now got a new key value layer that shares the performance and correctness improvements between LDBTDB and LDBMDB. It's basically like Samba's DB wrap that exists elsewhere, but specific to the needs of the LDB layer. And so it has this API. The first three are the things that are most fundamental to a key value API for our needs: store, delete, and iterate. There's an update and iterate, which is due to the different locking semantics you need in that. And because we don't want to... one of the things that Volcker added to TDB a long time ago was a routine where while you've got the TDB locked and you're just traversing one record, you can parse the record there without TDB doing an internal mem copy for you. This turns out to make a pretty big difference to some performance cases. And so we made sure to plumb that through the API as well. And LDB uses this quite extensively these days. So extensively that we don't actually have a generic fetch interface. There's only fetch and parse with a function. If you wanted to generically fetch it for some reason, you'd have to write a parse function that just does a mem copy. But that's how much we don't go and just copy blobs out of the database. We always use the parse function. We added a locking API, so this mirrors the things that TDB was already doing. So lock read, unlock read, begin write, prepare write, abort write, and finish write, which map to the TDB prepare commit and things like that. The names have all been deliberately chosen not to be the names that are used elsewhere in LDB, not to confuse you, but actually to make it a little easier, because it's very... Otherwise, what was happening is this a key value operation or is this an LDB operation? So the English language is way too full of synonyms, so Garmin chose a synonym for every one of these locking APIs so that we could try and remember exactly what we were doing. And then we have a meta API. So the meta API just handles some of the little boring things like returning the current error that's occurred, because TDB works that way where it sticks an error on an error context. So we never got TDB2s, so we're stuck with, you know, needing to handle a few of the odd details about how it works. Getting the name of the database, that just plumbs through to the TDB name operation. It's basically used for debug messages, but it's quite handy when you need it. A flag to say whether it's changed, because TDB, we use the TDB sequence number feature. For LMDB, we simply say always changed. We would like a flag that was able to, some way of telling, just has the database changed at all. Okay, so that's one of the things to...
Why doesn't it have a change since when or since
when? It's since the last time you called it. Because that's...
state again.
Yeah, lots of state. No, good feedback. And then we've got another one to say whether there's a transaction active. Because I got sick of having counter variables inside TDB and outside that were counting whether there was a transaction. So I added an API that said, are we in a transaction? And this plumbs that further up, because we were previously doing adding and decrementing integers. And it turns out that after this many years of evolution that we all still can't count. So here was our first hurdle, locking. We Even just the most basic prototype that we were working on found issues in Samba's locking layer. So you might remember that Samba 4.7 was shipped with a pretty impressive set of updates that kept me well away from all my other work for a couple of months, that where we found lots of locking issues. And they were found because when Garmin started doing the LMDB backend, he found that a counter had been missing because LMDB wouldn't let us proceed without a read lock. And so things failed. And so we then realized that TDB, which would allow you to do to proceed without a global read lock, that then showed that we didn't have global read locks, which then showed that we weren't keeping our LDAP database consistent as we were moving through it. So we fixed that for Samba 4.7, but it was probably behind a lot of our replication issues, and it was the strictness that a second implementation brought, where it had slightly different APIs and it had a global read lock that we needed to take out in order to do any reads, that made us actually realize that we weren't taking one out at all. The second hurdle was more locking. As many have found out, most of computer science seems to be about locking, and occasionally we do something else. So we just couldn't get this thing to pass make test. We had strange failures in replication. We had unlock ordering issues in replication, where you would go and make changes to the database, but you would first unlock the database containing the sequence number. So someone else could come in, they're waiting for the lock to read the sequence number. And as soon as it becomes unavailable, of course, they get the read lock and are able to read it. But the actual things the sequence number represented had not yet been written to disk. The unlocks had not occurred. And so you would read the old values. So this particularly caused a number of issues in replication. And so we've now fixed those issues and proposed the backports to 4.7 and 4.8. We also found issues where we were doing modification without a global write lock in the startup. Now, it's perfectly legal in TDB, but LDB is transaction-based, and we really should be using transactions for everything. So it's only in a init time, but it's not good. We also then added some checks to our key value layer to basically make sure these things couldn't happen again. So even against TDB, which doesn't have the fundamental restrictions, say, you don't have a transaction. You're not going to even write to the database. There was a bizarre thing in TDB where it would go and say, oh, I've modified the database. Oh, did I have a transaction? Oh, modify without transaction after writing to the database. Volker.
DB Wrapper ensures that.
Yeah.
If you have a persistent database, so just as a note, if the DB Wrap layer puts that restriction on top, if you have a persistent database, you can only write within a transaction.
Yeah, that's very sensible to be happy.
So we figured that out for other databases too.
Oh, good. Yeah. I do fear we have probably learnt lessons that have been hard learnt at other times in other places. The third hurdle we had was around the maximum key size. The TDB has an unlimited key size, as far as I'm aware. Probably however much you can get. 4 gigs is the key. True. So LMDB is limited to 511 bytes for the key. I think you can change it if you recompile it, but we'll want to operate against system packages, so no choice. LDB uses the DN as the key. DNs do not normally get 511 bytes long, but they could, and we don't really want to start failing only when someone manages to create the perverse domain. So what we did is that we changed to using the GUID as the key and then having an index for that. So this new GUID, what we call the GUID index work, was done middle of last year, and that was basically done with a view towards LMDB because we knew this restriction was coming at us. So what we've gone and done is created indexes. Our index scheme used to rely on the DN of every object in the index going into the index, but it turns out variable length strings are not very efficient for trying to do anything on. So GUIDs is what we chose. In hindsight, we probably could have done with 32-bit numbers and just said that you'll never put more than 4 billion things in your database over time, which is what Windows does. But at this stage, we took off just as much, the littlest that we could pick off at a time, and so we chose the GUIDs. Every record in Samba has a GUID anyway. But what about the indexes? The index is created by putting the index key, like the attribute, and the value in a TDB key. So you have this at index record that is the TDB key, and you have Sam account name and my username, and that's literally what goes in the key. So what if that value was very, 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 very long? Now, you could just say we're not going to allow index on long values, but that gets really awkward, and you have to have schema size restrictions to make sure that really can't happen, or because you want to really rely on the index data, the index records if you've got them. You don't want to say this one failed the index, we're going to scan the whole database. It's not a good plan. And so what we thought we would do, and we convinced the customers that this would be the safest and reasonablest thing to do, was be to keep the indexes in a TDB. So we just have two databases next to each other, we just lock and unlock them at the same time, and everything would be good. But the more we went down the locking hell to get there, the more we didn't wish to engage a new seventh circle of locking hell by having another lot of databases and lock ordering to go with it. Because, of course, there'd be sometimes you would make updates, you wouldn't change the index, and sometimes you would. And so then you would have different databases locked at different times. That gets into the lock ordering kind of rules. It just got very scary. And what we realized is that this case where you've got this 511-byte value that you're going to check in the index was going to be incredibly rare, and it didn't matter if it was a little bit slower, as long as it worked. So Gary worked off on this plan and spent another month pottering through and writing incredibly large amounts of tests, which actually ended up being very useful because it locked down exact formats that our index was. It turns out there was no test that said, when you index this, this is the value you'll get. So, and along the way, we locked in the new format. So we truncate the index. So we go to the length that we expect it to be, and we go and just cut it off. And then we pass back a flag saying we truncated, so that we could, and then you just got to manually match each of the, say, two records that could possibly match. Ironically, in the process, we found and fixed the 4.8 update bug, because now there was a chance that a single index could return two could have the same value twice, a few other interesting combinations. But we didn't realize the importance of it, so it just went into master until after 4.8 was out, and so we had to then just cherry-pick those back and add some more tests. So having solved the fundamental issues and built the thing and got it all going, it was time to start looking at performance. And so we had three measures that we used. Make perf test on our hardware test server. It's an old AMD Athlon, but you, when you want to ask for a test server, you get the scraps that the sysadmins have decommissioned from everything else. I really need to beg for a new server at some point, but the time being, that's what we use, just to have a consistent hardware platform, because we just found the cloud is lovely, and we're really proud of the cloudless cloud, but cloud environments just get a bit noisy. It's hard to get a consistent number on them. We did do the traffic replay tool in the cloud. I'll talk a little about what that is, and I've got a test where I just add a pile of users and groups on my workstation, and that's crummy, in terms of reproducibility and all the rest, but it's something I've been measuring over time, so it has some validity. So make perf test. There was a small disappointment. I managed to get one of the directors to say at our end of week drinks, there was a 30% change in performance with LMDB. Actually, it was a 30% loss. The write calls that LMDB uses to ensure that the to guard against corruption of the database, rather than, because TDB just happily writes to memory with a read-write mmap. The write calls there were getting caught by socket wrapper, which is LD preloaded over the whole stack. And so that then meant that just as because it's doing it very often, the cost of going into socket wrapper, walking down a file descriptor list that's a linked list, finding the file descriptor and saying, okay, that's not a network socket, I can happily not do anything here. Maybe they're not even enrolled, so it has to get to the end of the list, was just enough to slow it down. Socket wrapper could potentially be improved in this, I'm sure. But it was, we found a workaround. We already were playing with the idea of using Linux user space namespaces to replace socket wrapper, just as a way of trying to see could we use these newer technologies as a way of working with our tests. So Garmin did that, and that then ended up with a perhaps 10% slower change, but not the nearly. It was starting to get back towards the noise.
Why do you want to benchmark with socket wrapper active?
Why do we benchmark the socket wrapper? Because it makes it really easy to set up the test environment. So we have a make perf test that was written a little while back that runs a number of tests against Samba and just instantly creates the environment the same way a make test does. So it was a useful way to get quick and dirty numbers within a self-contained environment that we could just keep rebuilding. And I'll show you later a set of graphs that we get out of that.
Yeah, but we have all sorts of crap there, or we might have a lot of crap that is only available with developer that slows things down.
Yep.
So, I mean, to get real numbers, you
of
want
course.
The minus 03, you want the minimum amount of code, and...
Oh, I totally agree. So what we use this for isn't to work out what the final performance will be. I mean, they just end up being numbers, but it helps us a lot with working out, did this break things worse? Yeah, because you can see the regressions in that, even if the baseline's still the same baseline.
Yes, but for this, it doesn't matter whether you have a relative performance loss of TDB versus
no.
LMDB. You get a regression curve, and there, all this work is,
Yes.
Why?
Yeah. Well, yeah, we just wanted to check that it wasn't a real loss using the same...
But for that, setting up a real server would have been possible, right?
Yes, and we've done some of that as well. It wasn't a major amount of effort to sort of do this particular namespace work, and it allowed us to alleviate our concerns. We also use the traffic replay tool. So this is a tool that we've got to create an amplified anonymous traffic capture. And on that, we got similar numbers to TDB. We need to retry with a larger database because we think LMDB will show most strength at the very large sizes compared to TDB. But there really wasn't much in it. And the last test that we've been doing is just adding users and groups in on my workstation. So this is how we. This is the graph of how things have been going over time. So it used to be a real problem adding the users to the 1-4 groups, and we're only getting 26,000 users in. And as each Samba release has gone in, we've eked out a little bit more performance out of the add, and particularly the group modify part of the task. So I was really pleased to see Samba 4.9 still topping out at 100,000 users with TDB. We were a little bit surprised with the answer on LMDB. What went wrong? Fsync. So these tests were written, they called TDB no fsync as the environment variable to ensure the fsync went away, but LMDB, for some reason, hasn't chosen to honor the TDB no fsync environment variable. So we found, we know that there's, of course, the MDB no sync flag, but Samba wasn't, and we thought we coded it in, but some hilarious patches have since been merged into master where the configuration option was swapped around and placed, and not had the right colon placed in the right spot in the Python end of things compared to the C end of things. So we quickly got those patches written while, I think, in one of the airports on our way here. And I sent the job back off back to my workstation at Catalyst, and we got on our next flight. And by the time we arrived in Dubai, I logged into the server, and we got the next lot of answers. New numbers is that we got to 124,000 users with LMDB once fsync was removed. So not as much as I expected, honestly. But the real lesson is that Samba's module stack is still the slowest factor. So this graph shows what's happening with in terms of the latency for adding each user, and then along the side you can see how many users we're able to add. Now the lines do this fan thing because sometimes you add one user to one group, to two groups, to three groups, or four, so that we get a relatively, it's a very synthetic benchmark, but it's, you often have the employees group with everybody, you've got other groups. That was the thing that the test was originally written to catch. The green line down the bottom is the time spent adding the single user to the database, and you can see quite how low that is, particularly with LMDB. That's not the slow bit. It's doing these modifiers that's taking the time. Samba is the slow bit. You can see here, we've got this extended callback here, which is, I need to work out why it's called, because it's a good 20% of the time we're spending. And I think we shouldn't need that information, or I need to understand why we need it when we're doing the group modification. I can also see we're spending a lot of time italic free, which means that we're potentially allocating more memory than we should in this big stack over here. So that shouldn't be too hard to chase down, and we can look at. And generally, when we're trying to, we've optimized this italic free work in the past a number of times. It usually comes down to doing much less allocation up at the top end, doing more of your parsing inside, in memory efficient ways. So that we've made some really big improvements in that in the past, and we think we can still do some more there. So, Samba's module stack is still the slow factor on top of this. So that's not so bad. We've addressed the customer's demand for scale. We're currently limited to 6 gig for just reasons, but that's just compile time constant. It was easy to get the code merged and change a constant later. But we open up some really interesting opportunities. The current status is that there's still a TDB that's called SAM.LDB that is the front end of the database stack, and you're still and it's still one subtree per DB file. Now, this creates some interesting locking things, and Howard was, gently educating me with a clue bat about the futility of what we've done there. So it's quite likely a future evolution of this will collapse all these databases back down into one file and find some way to teach LDB about this, so that we just have a single lock and perhaps have less of our locking insanity. So where's the future? We really would like to use LMDB's B-tree properties for the index, because that way we can do greater than and less than indexing. And this really matters for our server, because one of the most common expensive queries is the replication query, USN chains greater than or equal to X. Now, that's currently a full scan on our database, but at 300,000 objects, that's going to be a little expensive. So if we can then go and just jump to that index point in the database and then just keep walking to the right, we can then go and get all those objects until there are no more objects and we started moving on to the next index. So that would be really useful. Sub-databases, potentially one per index, but that might be expensive. I think but certainly one a sub-database per subtree would be really sensible. But the last thing here is actually the thing I'm really most looking forward to with working with LMDB. TDB only has one level of transaction, and LDB pretends to have multiple levels of transaction, but just fakes it. It's literally a counter. How could this possibly go wrong? TDB has a flag where if something's gone wrong in the transaction, it sets an error and you can never commit the transaction. LDB does not. And that's real. Genuine things happen. You go to the to do a constrained update, it fails, and you don't. And you want to just read, like for example, or you might do a rename onto an object that exists. In replication, you want to detect that, go back, and then put something lost and found, things like that. So our code relies on this behavior that an error can occur, and we back it out. But the problem is we can't back it out. Some of these operations modify the index as they go, and then the transaction's committed, and so the index can become corrupt. So I found this out when I was trying to fix some of the bugs that we recently fixed in LDB, and I just had to actually go and say, I can't fix this right now. We've got to try and get this DB upgrade bug in. But we need to. The way I'd like to fix it is to move to LMDB as fast as we can get confidence in the tool and use the sub-transactions. We'll also be able to ditch the in-memory extra database that was meant to be faster for our indexes, because I think with LMDB and the way it works, it will just be reasonable enough to just use the memory-mapped LMDB for the index records and not have a special index pointer TDB in memory. So that will make things substantially safer, and and that I hope will then also give us good reason to explore other features that LMDB has for us. However, there are also sharp edges. There's different locking behavior, no exclusive access. The file's being sparse by default, so DB operations can fill the file system without there being a particular resize point. I mean, TDB will grow to 4 gigs, which is a bit of a limit as well. So there's some concern about just how this will quite work out. Now, we cap our file size at 6 gig at the moment, but that has its own problems. Files are not extended automatically. I'm a bit of asking for two things at once here, but these are just the sort of edges we need to be aware of and where they're different to TDB. The main concern I have is that the administrator needs to know the size they want up front, or the size they're willing to commit to their disk. And because of the sparseness, they don't know they've committed. You know, if we just hard code a constant of 16 gig, they don't know they potentially committed to the 16 gig of that disk being available without sort of notice. So there's a few little sharp edges that I would like to make easier on our administrators. But the biggest thing is we don't have any real world experience yet. So we need to see how this actually goes in production, what things actually happen, so that we can try and make the next, you know, the next release afterwards not be just an experimental feature, but being a, hey, this is the future we want. That finishes talking about LMDB. I thought I'd just mention a few of the other things that we've been doing. So beyond LMDB, we have also been trying to do some work to support more connections than HDC. XAMPP 4.6 removes a single process restriction on the NetLogon server, which was really helpful for one client that had a really large 802.1x logon load. XAMPP 4.7 has a multi-process LDAP server, but it actually turns out that forking for per LDAP connection is a really good way to just blow up memory. Mostly because people ask if they download the whole database, that dirties that particular child, and that memory is never reusable because of the way fork memory works. So we then went and did a pre-fork mode so that the next search can then reuse that process's memory after the free, and that's actually really good. That's where we're getting our best performance numbers at the moment for a big Active Directory domain controller with many clients. And I'm thinking we might want to make this the default for pre-fork. It does throw the NetLogon case under a bus because of reasons, and administrators may need to choose, am I an LDAP-heavy server or am I a NetLogon-heavy server? It's not ideal. I don't like that kind of thing. I prefer XAMPP to just have the way you should do it, but we just haven't managed to make pre-fork work with NetLogon. We have the new traffic replay performance tool. We can record and replay traffic. Real-world loads replayed, but without needing the real-world confidential information. We can amplify the traffic. We can do comparative testing now between Windows and XAMPP because we've made the tool able to work against Windows as well. XAMPP is now within about 50% of Windows performance for the benchmarks that we've done. It's a bit hard to really know because we haven't been able to get the tool has run out of puff before the Windows server did. But at these, you know, when it was originally written, we were able we weren't really aiming against that kind of load. So the tool needs some real work. But against a single CPU target system, we can slow both XAMPP and Windows down enough to saturate things and start measuring the gap. So this is the graph of what we got when we ran a performance tool against XAMPP and Windows. One virtual CPU on the Catalyst Cloud, 35 times the speed of the original client traffic. So it's not really the upper bound for what Windows can do, but we've got a bit of an idea of where XAMPP can get to. I don't have the comparative table of the previous versions, but we have dramatically increased our performance over the last few releases, and we've now got tools that we can use to actually start benchmarking this over time. But yeah, we're looking to improve the tool again when we can next get some funding to do so, and keep on running this as a way of checking that XAMPP continues to be as good as it can be. Against this, we do want more network captures and a sample of traffic of real-world networks so that we can actually, and preferably ones that people are willing to let us publish, for example, on XAMPP Wiki, so that other people can reproduce the results that Catalyst is doing internally. If we get diverse real-world loads, we'll avoid skewing the results to being a perfect example of someone else's network, but entirely unreasonable for the network that you're on. Just to come to the end, this squiggly lines is what we were using for the make perf test. It's the one that runs under socket wrapper. We've got it all normalized to one on the top left where the little sun is, but it just shows you the points at which we've actually managed to make a big difference to performance. So this is what we use it for. The idea is to actually spot these things like here where some of the performance spiked up and got worse, and to actually notice, well, what do we do there? Maybe we need to fix it. So that's been going on. That script runs on our on this little AMD machine when it's not doing anything else, and then Douglas helps me plot the graph every now and then. So that's why it's a bit old because I haven't asked him again, but. We use this just to try and track a pile of different metrics against the Active Directory DC just over time, just to have some idea that when things have changed that perhaps we didn't intend to have changed. Because it seems to be, unfortunately, a little too easy to put in a performance regression into Samba, because our test suite only really picks up functional regressions in an automatic way. Finally, just before I finish up and have any more questions, I thought I'd just talk a little bit about the other things that Catalyst has done in the last little while, because we've been busy. We've got encrypted secrets, so you can have a local key file to encrypt the secrets in the database. It's the first step towards really locking that key away into, say, a network access service for virtual machines, because virtual machine disks are a bit too easy to steal these days. We've got Unix-compatible passwords building on the work that Stefan Metzmacher did for the password sync tool. So that allows us to store and retrieve SHA-256 and 512 crypt-based passwords, share them with other systems, but not have to have it encrypted with GPG. We've got audit logging in 4.7 and 4.9, where we output audit logs of authentication and now all database changes into JSON logs that are streamed across into our debug system and therefore available for going into your big log stash and other big systems. We've got RDC support really working well, where previously it existed but was quite experimental. We have DNS zone scavenging that's going to come in for Samba 4.9. This will allow dynamic records to vanish after they haven't been updated for a time. And this is an optional feature on the DNS zone. We've got some little tidy ups to make the demo clean up its own DNS records and tools to clean up other left behind DNS records from various things that having to manually look over the whole database. Fine-grained password policy so that we can have complex passwords for some people and simpler passwords for others. Domain backup will be coming in for 4.9, as well as the capacity to rename a domain, which is really important for lab environments, not just for corporate takeovers and rebrandings, but there's a real need to be able to take the production domain with all the warts and put it into the lab and see how the next version of Samba is going to work, rather than just hoping you can replicate it with a few dodgy scripts. So we've had people try and do this before, and I gave them advice about changing the Kerberos password and doing various rename things. But the two domains just butted heads. No matter how well you try and firewall your network, it just doesn't work. So this will be able to create something where it really will be a separate domain. They just won't stomp on each other's feet. That's going to land for 4.9. I've got a team that's busy working on that back at Catalyst while I'm swanning my way around Europe. Finally, that slide just talks about some of the other things that Catalyst does. We're quite a broad company of over 250 people worldwide, focused on open source software, and my little group is the Samba group down the bottom. But this is Samba at some kind of scale, and any questions?
Now that we have Howard and Andrew in the same room, is it any value in learning from what OpenLDAP has as an on-disk format with indexes and so on?
When you talked about the LMDB key size, obviously that's not a restriction in OpenLDAP because, first of all, we never index full DNs. We only index RDNs.
Yeah.
All right. And then, and you talked about GUIDs versus 32-bit IDs. In OpenLDAP, we use a 64-bit ID.
Yeah.
There are some things that you're treading over that obviously we figured out a long time ago. But
Yeah. So a lot of it's been the matter of doing an incremental change on what we've done. Certainly the way my team works is that we can take on basically just chunks of work and we can try and stitch them together a bit, but we've got to be able to do a single chunk that will do things. So that's why I think getting the progress is a little bit step. So we take on, so we haven't, for example, redone the just the on-disk format of the attributes. We know we desperately need to because LDB pack, if you look at the flame graph, now I flicked through it, but I actually here's the real one. And if I can make my miss the mouse. Yeah. We can actually click on this thing and actually see where the time's being spent. And actually we find that we actually spend an awful lot of time in some of the unpack kind of routines. And I'll jump on this one. So up here is some of our unpack work. The scroll bar probably. Help me. And so when we unpack, we do a lot of memcopy and a lot of pulling out to try and find the entries that we need. We need one value in this, but because it's not ordered in any useful way, we can't then go and do a bisect search to find the particular one we want. We have to pull them all, walk the list. There's lots of silly little things like that that we know we need to fix, but we just got to take on one sort of technology step at a time rather than being able to, sadly, do a year's work program where we'll go through and do them in a, you know, in the most reasonable sequence. So in the meantime, we hope that we can make an improvement to Samba in a place while we do it, and that means our customers can see the result and pay us. So, you know, not the way I'd be if I was a subscription-based, you know, kind of we're going to be doing things for ages, but we're project-based, so it's just the way we have to work.
The question for me would be, is there a description of the format OpenRDAP uses, except for the source code?
At one of the OpenLDAP developer days, actually back in 2003 or 2005, I discussed the data format that we're using. That's an older version of it, of course. So yeah, like, you know, we spend zero time in unpack because, you know, we just give you a pointer to the memory map and off you go. Mm. This is one of the things that has been on my kind of wish list for a while, is that we would have, you know, SLAPD's back MDB with an LDB interface to it. So we just have an LDAP database library, you know.
Yeah, and these kind of things could be really useful.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
I just picked another mic, so please discuss further. No, nothing more? Okay, yeah, so...
Question.
Let him go, okay. If you could have the other one from then.
So. What is your wish list for Samba 4.10?
Oh. For Samba 4.10, what I'd like to see us doing is getting beyond the... Actually spend a bit of time getting beyond just doing what Windows does, and actually to branch out into making things better for our administrators. We saw a great talk this morning from Alexander Bokovoy about making our tools spit in and out JSON, because that's what automatable tools will do better. Like, we've got this Samba tool, DRS show REPL, that originally did, well, that's what Windows does. So it spit out an incomprehensible page of text, because Windows spat out an incomprehensible page of text. And instead, we've been asked, well, can you make something that works, that actually tells the administrator what they need to know? So Douglas has done a visualization tool that shows you with ASCII art where the replication changes are across the network, and he's going to finish this off to be a GRS show REPL, will say just things are healthy, we're talking to everybody, or things are not healthy. So that's around some of the tooling, but I think we can also do that in some of the features. I'd love to get us to the point where allocating UIDs and GIDs is actually handed back off to WinBind instead of the things that we're doing, but stored back in the directory for everyone else to see, so that we can do things like have automatic, when you create a user, it gets a UID and a GID that's domain consistent, stored away in the directory for the dumb tools that keep on reading our directory, but that will actually be there and stay there, so that we have a first-class Unix directory server that anything that has seen a Unix directory server can basically cope with. I want to see us getting to be the point where we give FreeIPA a run for its money as a directory server in the Unix world, because we've got something that will just natively serve the Unix world and the Windows world, as you know, in a fashion that is quite suitable for both. There's some things I'd like to see us go for, if we could get people interested in developing some of that. We've seen a little bit of this work with some of the things that William Brown popped up with on the mailing list a few weeks ago. We just started saying, hey, the schema is too hard to add things to, and there's no samples for all these other common schemas. Why don't I add that? So some of these user, you know, administrator friendliness for stepping beyond the Windows mold. And the last thing I want to do is I want to make Samba more secure than a Windows server is by not allowing the domain administrator the ability to replicate, to create a new domain controller or do replication, unless they possess a private key. so that you can actually lock down and separately have a separate infrastructure that, that issues out domain controllers that you can actually lock down. And everyone who gets domain admin credentials, because most domains distribute them too widely, I keep hearing stories of 60 domain admins and wonder, why? But if we can make it so that that's the reset everyone's passwords, all the auditable things, but they can't get to the secrets. Things like that are my are my crazy wish list for a 4.10 and beyond. Things that Windows hasn't already done, as well as the let's get the 2012 support claims, all those kind of things that Windows has. So that's where I dare to dream, if I have a small army and the people to coordinate them. Yeah.
Just on this flame graph, can you point out how much time is spent in locking?
Not very well, because it's a CPU flame graph, so it only catches the time spent actually spinning the CPU. So I could get different ones that would show that, but I'm. But the flame graphs, Brendan Gregg's flame graphs, is something that we've used extensively in Catalyst, and I really like them for just trying to dig into what is making this thing slow. So just the interactivity of being able to go and see, you know, okay, this, you know, this modify, and we are spending it in these three chunks that we do, and we can work out, do we need to do all those chunks? Why are we doing, spending so much time in Talloc? You know, so are we just allocating too many things only to free them a moment later? Things like that. So, okay. Well,
Any more? No. So then, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And if you like, you can have